Okay. Welcome everyone to the September meeting of the Champaign County Mental Health Board. I'd like to call us to order and request that Stephanie do the roll call.
Tom Moore. Judy O'Connor.
Here.
Joe Omoosagie.
Here.
Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Kyle Patterson.
Here.
Julian Rappaport, Ann Robin, Margaret White, Susan Fowler.
Here.
Hey, this is the opportunity to have citizen input. We have a very small audience today. I'm not sure if we have citizen input. We later on will have agency input. But I'll pause for a minute in the event that we have any citizen input. Okay. Seeing none, I would like to move approval of the agenda. And I'd also like to note that the agenda has only one motion today. So there's not a lot of voting to occur today. A lot of discussing maybe, but not voting. Can I have a move to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second. Okay. Approved. My comments, I'm sorry I wasn't here for the study session. I heard it was great. I also heard that we might consider looking at outputs from our own board in terms of how effective we are, and I think that's great, and we'll look to Tom and Julian, who have been working with the evaluators from the U of I on the committee to provide some recommendations and suggestions at a future board meeting. I won't put you on the spot today. Okay, well, let's... yes. My other comments are that it was really nice to have a break. Not that I don't appreciate all our activities together and being together, but we worked really hard this past year, and so having a July and August break was appreciated. I know the staff kept working really hard during that break, to the point that one member actually broke her ankle. And I'm sorry that that happened, but I really do appreciate the consistent and hard effort that the staff made while we were able to sit back a bit. I will say that the executive group did finally complete Lynn's evaluation, so that was an activity that needed to happen and did happen. Other than that, I know we're beginning to start the process once again of formulating our three-year plan, and also based on the three-year plan, getting ready to do a request for proposals or a notification for applications, I guess is a more accurate description. So we'll be getting back into the swing of things again, but we do have time in the next couple of months to set the course for the next 3 years. And I think that's why we received 180-some pages of reports. If you didn't have a chance to read all the reports, don't panic. We have had some of these reports before, but they've been compiled together. Plus, we'll have an opportunity to ask Mark to lead us through. But thank you, Mark, for preparing me the briefing memorandum and putting it together. So I think that's it for my comments, and I would suggest we move to new business, and this may actually be a meeting where we end before time. One never knows with this group. Okay.
I think if we set that as our long-term outcome, we could do it.
So, starting with new business, the needs assessment, which is pages 3 to 181, there are at least 11 reports, not counting the needs assessment, because I've been trying to tab them. Mark, do you want to introduce your briefing memo? And
sure. The briefing memo is just almost intended to it's as an overview and to kind of identify what you have in the subsequent pages, so that if there was something you were particularly interested in, you could go to those. The needs assessment, I think that probably the centerpiece of it is the work we did on the online survey. Mm-hmm. That we worked on that, started working on that about a year ago. Folks had an opportunity to complete the needs assessment, the online survey, for several months, and then the results were compiled, and we actually had a presentation in June with Alex Campbell on the outcome of the needs assessment. And then subsequent to that presentation, we also received a data analysis, which basically looked at what I view as common themes across the various responding groups, the respondents, common themes within the consumer and caregiver, and then also provider and stakeholder. And so that is some new information that you haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. But and then in addition to that, we've also included the original results that were presented last in June. And then from there, there's a number of different documents that have some element or relevance to the board's work, be it the Community Health Improvement Plan, the I-Plan. There are excerpts from that as it relates to behavioral health care, and although it does not include developmental disabilities, at least not in this particular edition. In addition to, I guess, also in the plan is some specific information that Kim pulled together coming out of the regional planning and the ISC group in terms of surveys that they did of consumers getting screened and for services, the independent service coordination group, as well as some PUNS data. We did not include those specific documents in here, but the results are summarized as part of the summary. And if you cared to see those specific results, we could share those with you. So moving on, you also, in addition to the Community Health Improvement Plan, and there's a number of things that are interesting there related to drug overdose. And one of the things that we found actually quite surprising was they talked about the number of providers in this community, and that it actually exceeds the number of providers per I guess population in the nation as well as Illinois. Now, it doesn't feel that way. Mm-mm. For I think the folks that we serve, but that we do have more providers here in Champaign County than the state average or the national average, which I think kind of surprised us. But then there is some specific information related to suicide rates, gun violence, and so forth in that particular the excerpts from that particular document. And I know it's not – some of this is not easy to read because of the way it's presented, but we did provide links to the documents so that if you cared to, you could go to the original source document and review those and typically one of the reasons they don't transfer well is that the original document would have been in color and don't copy well over to black and white. So there's also, you have some of the criminal justice reports that we've seen. There's the crisis intervention team. It's 12 months worth of data. I think we've talked about that in the past.
But this is more data. This is newer data.
Yes, it is. Yes. And it's for 12 months, whereas in the past we typically get 1 month or 3 months worth of data at a time. And that provides some interesting information in terms of crisis response within the community, time of day, day of week. Mm-hmm. That's of particular interest. And then from there, we've had conversations about the people in the community that don't have a place to live, the homeless right. population, and the continuum of care, the work of the continuum of care with their point-in-time survey. And so that information is included. And then from there, you get into some other documents, health disparities, which is brief, but if you were to follow the link, you would get additional information on that, as well as I would point to Chandra, actually, beyond what's included here if there were questions about health disparities in this community and underserved populations, because that is a lot of the work she's done with the Access Initiative and continues to do with the board.
I found the CIT responses
sure.
report to be really shocking. That hit me probably harder than any other, because mm-hmm. it doesn't suggest, that there were 752 suicide threats or attempts mm-hmm. for which crisis intervention teams were called in.
Yes.
In a year.
Yes.
In 1 year in our county. And that was followed by 385 disorderly disruptive behavior. I would have expected disorderly disruptive to be the high point, not suicide threats or attempts. It was, I know that we've had difficulty taking people who are suicidal to the emergency rooms and getting help. And I think I read in here that there's that OSF and the Pavilion are now working together, and Rosecrantz and Carl.
That's actually something I spoke to in my staff report.
Oh, that's where I saw it.
And
okay.
Carl is contracting with the Pavilion for crisis services at the emergency department. And then Rosecrantz now has a 24/7 presence staff at the emergency department at OSF.
And is this in response to some of this data, or is it just part of what different committees in town have been working on?
Is this okay?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't mean to get us off task either.
This is a little bit future, but we have, because we've been working with the CIT steering committee group for a long time, and this information about suicide popped up a while ago. That was the predominant reason for calls. And this is also, you know, logically, this is why people are going to the emergency departments, not so much to jail, which is, you know, where we initially were working on that. So now and this was suggested to me by our national project mentor, that we ask law enforcement to help us get access to hospital administration to talk about this, which we did. So I've had a couple of meetings. Mark was with me for a very large meeting of stakeholders who are working on this, and one of them is here. So that people are looking at the same data and talking about it at least occasionally together, because I think everyone is working on solutions, as Mark just pointed out. And we will have a study session on October 24th about the crisis services. So maybe there will be more known about crisis services by October 24th, but this has been the reason for those additional convenings of stakeholders.
On the state has also made some changes, and so related to crisis response, and moving to more of a mobile crisis response, although our response to the emergency department would still qualify. But we will have choices, who is the SAS provider, but it also now has an expanded screening assessment and support services for youth, and it's for targeted to Medicaid, youth on families on Medicaid. And their role has been expanded to also serve adults. So you have that as an additional resource in this community. You have the change with at Carl using the pavilion and their resources. And then you have the existing crisis services through available through Rose Grants. So that's what kind of led to the need for the study session. But it does all tie back to the data that's coming out of the CIT report. So,
sorry, Mark, I kind of interrupted.
No, that was fine. I was starting to ramble. So
you were moving through the reports,
that.
Actually. You had just kind of hit the CIT and the next one.
Health disparities was, in the youth.
The Illinois Youth Survey is actually specific to it's a survey conducted within schools, but schools have to opt in as far as participating. So we had limited participation in the results of this survey, but it does give us a snapshot of youth perspective and first-time use. How many youth responding to the survey are using drugs and how frequently, and their perceptions about youth use within their schools and by their peers.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the health disparities data. And then from there, we start moving back a little bit into just some general data on well-being and then some specific information related to that the board has had in the past about our investments. In the past and where mental health board funding has been allocated.
151.
So
can we open it to questions from the board members who may have had time to read at least some of the reports?
Mark, I have a question on the Illinois Youth Assessment. At the schools that opted in, were all of the students in the school taking this test? I don't know if it was a choice or...
I believe they have a choice as to whether they participate.
It's always voluntary.
Okay, I didn't know. I was trying to...
Yeah, and the schools are not identified.
Yeah.
But we did only have two high schools participate and then, I believe, a private school. Two public high schools.
Is that because of a time constraint and not the actual material, or why would we not have a better participation?
Well, I think it's probably a number of factors. One is probably a time. Another is a school being reluctant to wanting to have the issue identified within their district. I think from the board's perspective and through, we actually fund a prevention program. Yeah. The board funds a prevention program that is now with Rose Grants, previously with Prairie Center, that they do sessions in classrooms, typically a health classroom for like sixth, seventh, and eighth grade primarily. And I think from their perspective, they would like to see more participation as well. And I think for us as a planning body, it would be good. It would serve us to have better participation. Regrettably, the 2018 survey had no high schools participate, and that's why you're presented with 16 data. So. Yeah. So, the behavioral health group, in the I-plan section, I make reference to three different work groups that came out of the community health and improvement plan, the public health district improvement plan. One of them is a behavioral health work group. That group is looking at the issue of increased prevention initiatives and treatment options for youth. And the subject of the Illinois Youth Survey has come up within that group. So I think that group will certainly be taking a look at the survey and what could be done to encourage schools to participate. But I believe that through the prevention program at Prairie Center, that in the past they have promoted the survey and participation in the survey.
I think at the very least this is a resource to hold on to as we move through the planning stages. It's not often that we have so many resources at our fingertips. So if you can just keep the blue book, we'll call it, through the course of the year, it helped me to go back again and look at the intercept mapping and to think about the percentages of funding that were directed at different initiatives in the past years, which is also in here. I had it tabbed at one point.
I think it's somewhere in there.
So 152, 153. So we still are putting the largest amount of money into the criminal justice behavioral health services. And that's been, very data-driven on our part. But this is also bringing up, and then followed by community-based services, but it's certainly bringing up some of the concerns that are outside of the criminal justice system. So trying to weigh what we've learned from these reports with how we're going to spend our money, I think, not our money, the county's money, will be a bit of a challenge. So with that, I would say we should probably move on to the three-year plan on page 182, and which is preceded by a briefing memo from both Lynn and Mark. So Lynn, do you want to start the discussion?
I think Mark has some comments to make about this. I just would say generally, when I jumped in, I had an ambition to change it completely, and every word that I read seemed still relevant, so that's, maybe not great that things haven't changed enough for the better that we can dump some of this, but I did think that we might reorganize some, and so there are a lot of changes. I realize it's hard to read with the strike-throughs. It might be easier to read electronically, and we know that there's, well, I think this is probably where Mark wants to comment, but before you do that, I want to say that with that needs assessment, we don't capture the most recent important changes, which are the rate of uninsured is climbing in Champaign County. It was among the lowest in the state and country for a while, and now we're up to about 20% in uninsured. And that's all, I think that's for all populations, not just, like we did a really good job with children, getting children enrolled in insurance, but I think generally we're back up from about 6% to 20. And the other thing is keep your eye on the index of despair in rural regions, because we're starting to see waves of suicide, depression, and addiction in farm communities. So that, I don't sure how much that's going to affect us, but this has caused us to have a lot of conversation and look into lots of possible strategies for reaching people that haven't been struggling before. So we might start touching on that through the three-year plan, but those are two things that are not indicated in the long and interesting needs assessment that I kind of had in mind with the three-year plan. And with, we have a draft running for your first draft of funding priorities, too, which you'll see next month. So this is.
Similar to the priorities memo you'll see next month. This is just an initial draft. It's a starting point. One of the things that's mentioned in the memo, the cover memo, and I think is reflected in some of the conversation we just had about the needs assessment, is throughout the course of the year, we talk about a lot of different things, or we have study sessions, and that is all part of the needs assessment process. And so even though in the needs assessment document you've seen some of these things before, now they're all in one piece, in one place. It does inform some of the changes that we've at least initially identified in the plan. But again, this is just a starting point. We will send this out to you electronically. It'll be sent out to stakeholders and to providers and other interested parties for their input, and staff will continue to review this. This is only a starting point. It's not an end point. So I don't know. I guess I'll leave it there. And if the board has any observations or comments at this point.
Little thing. When I looked at the very first goal on page 185, under systems of care, and you have stricken addictions and substance use disorders out, and I wondered if that reflects.
What I meant to do is strike addictions and substitute the word.
Oh, okay. Well, that worried me. That worried me a lot.
This is why it's not great to give you
okay.
This kind of draft.
That's okay. Now I understand.
Anything that's been changed, be it new language or language to be struck, is highlighted. Language to be removed is got a strike through it, a line through it. New language is just simply highlighted. Thank you.
So I also have an observation to make that I think we've made before and would help the board to also recognize where we're most likely to put some of our planning efforts versus the staff. So this is a draft that guides the Mental Health Board and the DD Board. Or at least the Mental Health Board, but also to some extent the DD Board. And there are 10 goals, and there's not a goal that I could think of pulling out without it having a negative impact. But 10 goals is a lot of goals. And then within each of the goals, there are objectives. And about a year ago, we went through and we noted which of these were primarily staff-focused in that, you know, clearly, for example, I saw one, continue to monitor Medicaid at the state level. Well, that's something that I know the staff are doing. The board would be informed by the staff who are doing that monitoring. But for me to be able to kind of wrap myself around the 10 goals and the multiple objectives, it would just really help if somewhere on the side there was a notation of needs to be that would guide me to think about this really needs to be in our funding, in what we fund in the coming year, versus what the staff will do as part of their ongoing responsibilities. Does that make sense?
So you are asking for, and we did this last year, and we can put it back in.
It's a little bit
Is that board responsibility, staff responsibility?
It's along those lines, yes, so that because I do get overwhelmed. I don't know if anybody else does with 10 goals and multiple objectives, but I want to be able to kind of hone my attention on, I know the staff is doing this, and they will tell us if there's a problem. So if Medicaid is suddenly really in jeopardy, you're monitoring it, you'll inform us. That becomes something that we have to take into account in our funding decisions. But what do I really need to be thinking about a lot out of this document, or try to be tying in with our priorities for funding? Does that make sense? So we've got our mission, purpose, and 10-goal plan, but then we have our funding priorities, which somewhat crosswalk. Tom?
If I understand what you're saying, it would be like if we could take the what our allocations have been, you know, that form that comes out with everything that we've out here, and on those allocations, we should be able to trace back to the three-year plan. So we're funding that because it fits in somehow to this three-year.
Or it's part of ongoing staff responsibilities. I think that we clarified last year that some of this is staff work, and some of it, and all of it gets board response. Yeah. But some of it is more board work that the staff then responds to.
That part I understand more. It's if I'm understanding, those programs should be related to this.
Uh-huh.
Is that what you're trying
to
tell me?
The programs that we fund should clearly be related to the 10 goals.
Okay.
But it's a lot to think about 10 goals. So what we usually do is set 4 priority areas, and knowing from these goals, which maybe of those 4 priority areas they directly involve, would help. I just have to chunk things, and maybe I'm the only one on the board that feels that need. Go ahead, yeah.
I'm glad that you brought it up. We actually started with that draft that you and Mark worked through last year when we started working on this. But I think I'm understanding it differently, and I do feel like there's a little bit of a divide between how I think of this. Like, I think we have been treating this like, this is what we as staff do for you to support your mission, which is to spend this money in a certain way. And so it's all one thing, but I think under that you have several strategies for how to accomplish your mission with the fund. And the biggest strategy is obviously allocation of agency contracts. But if agencies don't respond to what you want to fund, either because they no longer exist, they don't have staff to run a new program, they just can't reach this high for the amount of money that's available, or, you know, whatever, or they're not interested in doing the work because of risk, or, you know, whatever, that another way you might accomplish your goals is through consultants, through an RFP, which we haven't done for a while, but it is an option for you, or through just board staff work, going back to the drawing board and figuring out a new strategy. So I don't know that for that reason, I don't think of it in the chunks that I think you've been looking for, and I didn't really understand that. So,
we'll see I'll see what I can do, and we'll talk about it. I mean, I think when I look at this, within some goals might be have objectives under them that are funding related, and others might be a staff related activity. But it may be that we can either identify them that way or sort the goals so that the objectives fall under certain goals and that those are section so that funding priority related goals and objectives are in one part of the plan and staff activity are in another or something, but we'll give it some thought.
And I don't mean to create busy work or more work.
No.
It's just...
Well, I think if we dig into it, we'll find out quickly if we can do it this way or not.
Okay. Yeah.
And complicate what you're suggesting, but I have a comment. I am looking at this three-year plan, and it has some different things in it than I've seen in the past, and I'm really thrilled at the way this plan has been put together. And one thing I noticed, Mark and I have talked about this over the years, is that we have a very large, what I think, commitment to criminal justice and mental health system, very large. And I'm wondering, as I read through this, if there isn't a way for us to be, as a Champaign County Mental Health Board, who supports a bunch of programs that deal with criminal justice and mental health, if there a way for us to become more involved with the policy of criminal justice, like criminal justice reform, because it seems to me that if we keep doing what we're doing and there is no attempt to do something with the process of incarceration, we're just standing still. I noticed in one of the goals we talk about the whole movement of decarceration, so of reducing. I don't think that that's going to simply happen by goodwill. I think it's going to take a great deal of advocacy, which I know that you also include, of us being involved with people who are advocating for change. And somehow that we need a voice, almost like our voice about stigmatization and how it impacts mental health. I think we need to have a bigger voice about how incarceration affects not only individuals, but families, children, community networks, and our community at large. And we've taken a big step, I think, and I'm really excited about that. I think that we somehow need to get engaged in the whole business of how to reduce incarcerations. And I passed on to Lynn some information. This is mind-blowing to me. Louisiana, which has incarcerated almost anybody who walks in the state, has now engaged in de-incarcerating, and they've reduced their prison population pretty significantly and to the point where they've saved something like $12 million in a year. Now, folks, if Louisiana could figure out that this is not a good idea, we certainly are able to figure out for our community how to do this kind of stuff. Some of this is local, and some of it is state-related. But I would like for us to entertain the idea of being more engaged in the policy of mass incarceration. I think it would also go a long way, if you remember the last time I met with you guys, you were commenting on how many of our programs are individually based and not community based. And I think if we want to make that shift at any time, we're going to need a policy change about incarceration and the horrible effect that it has on our communities.
Are you talking about Champaign County? Is there a spokesman for the state of Illinois about this topic?
I don't know that for sure, but I know that Representative Ammons is interested in these kinds of things. So, but I don't know if there is what you would call a spokesman for that.
But you're kind of raising almost the issue of supporting the work of the Reentry Council, for example, or the work of the group that was involved with the report on crisis intervention or behavioral justice. And I think, correct me, because I'm not sure, but the Mental Health Board has used staff time to support the work, but we haven't said, you know, we might actually need some funds to bring in a consultant to really kickstart some of these initiatives. And it
good opening to an important topic.
And we've funded agencies and programs. We haven't, and we've funded systems change, but we've done it through the existing staff of our program. And my question is that enough? Are we just so caught in the pattern of funding? Go ahead.
Is that okay?
Let me turn it over. That's just the other thing I thought of when we were looking at these materials.
So I think I've mentioned to you, and I, it was in a note that I sent you all after the long, hot summer about stuff I'd been doing, that on the health, on NACO's health committee, and NACO has over 3,000 members, on that health committee, we considered and recommended, I think, 13 resolutions, all of which were adopted by NACO, to support federal legislation. Over half of them had to do with behavioral health and justice. And so what's interesting is that's the health committee. There's also a justice committee, and I asked for that position, and I got health instead. But it turns out the Justice Committee doesn't even really meet that often, so I got – that was a nice track. So, you know, so that helps me to be aware of what kind of things could change at the federal level. And then Illinois is different from everybody else, so I have to, you know, stay tuned in through our state association for that. But I think we are at a point where if we were to take on a project such as staffing a behavioral health and criminal justice coordinating council, we might need to ask to go to hire a consultant to manage that work, because I feel like, you know, we're already pretty occupied, and this is really important, and I think we do have lots of good entry points to the issues, but we may not have the energy to accomplish what you're talking about.
You know, to Judy's point, I don't know about the state level, but there are local groups that are involved with criminal justice reform. And, you know, a thought that I have, what if we call a summit and bring together those groups and see what they're doing and see how we could attach ourselves to them? But at least that would be making a louder statement that we think that mental health is really related to criminal justice. And we think that criminal justice needs to be doing something different if it's going to impact our cities in a really significant way and in terms of mental health. So that part I think we can get in touch with. I don't know about the state, though.
I'm
almost certain that if we contact local people, they will know who the state person is.
I don't know if this is a sidebar that will be important, but I just watched a documentary about a gentleman who was released from prison after 19 years, and he was never able to find the services to help him function in a community. So it does become a mental health thing. I mean, it was tragic. It was people, relatives, friends that helped him get through it. It was not a agency, but it was so sad, and there are a lot of people who would come out with the same issues and hard to think about.
Let's move on. I think, though, we've kind of opened our thinking beyond the traditional funding patterns that we've engaged in a little bit. So, Lynn, the next thing is fund balances, tax liabilities, and unanticipated revenues, which is the briefing memo on page 191. Do we know more since you put this together? Wasn't there a decision about
it's related, but it's not.
Okay.
It's so what that news from last week does is, so the Supreme Court made a decision related to hospital property taxes, but both sides are excited about the decision, so, and feel it was a win for them. So what's happening, the county and Carl go back to court on January of 2019. There's a hearing scheduled in front of Judge Rosenbaum, and he's up for re-election, so I don't know what happens if he doesn't have the gig. So when I wrote this, it looked like sometime during 2019, we could end up with a whole bunch of money that we have to figure out how to spend during 2019 because you just don't need it. Your fund balance is sufficient without it. You are the only fund in the county that has enough money to pay it back if the bill comes due. So you're in a good position compared to everybody else. But if the money's available to spend, we got to think fast. So I was really worried about that, like getting some ideas together for you to think about so that you have time to think about them. And if you prefer one over the other, and I have a preference, it would take time to develop the process and give you time to consider and approve it. But now, today, I learned that because of the Supreme Court finding last week, it's likely this local decision will stay in appeals forever. So I was all like, hurry up and develop the tools. And my favorite strategy here is to use this very large sum of money to create a student loan repayment program for providers who are very badly needed, especially psychiatrists and behavioral health clinicians and direct support providers. I thought that would be such a boon, and I have the materials. If you all like that idea, we can develop the specific agreements and all of that stuff. There's hope, but now it looks like we might not have a windfall in 2019 and that things might just not change a whole lot. So the usefulness of this document then is more about smaller amounts of money and suggests that because you don't need to save any more money, you have an adequate fund balance, that if more money is coming back to us on this side of a fiscal year, so from July through the end of the year, we get money back from agencies, not for good reasons. Usually it's because they couldn't find staff to run a program or a threat from the state shut them down completely. So it's not good to receive the money back, but it happens. Sometimes it is good, like we get refunds. All my national conferences got refunded this year for a surprise. And then last year, Stephanie scored us $60,000 that was just sitting on the postage machine. So sometimes we get money for great reasons. We also get money associated with our anti-stigma events, and that is substantial sometimes. So it's probably a good idea for me to think about some process through which you could spend it. And so this is a nice, you know, it's just a bunch of different suggestions that people have had and that have potential. So that's it.
It's not urgent now.
Any responses to the memo? Do we owe any money back if there's a... That was one of my old questions.
Yes.
The liability of the $430,000 that was previously distributed, will we need to pay that back? And how quickly do we need to pay that back?
Well, you're the only, this is the only account that has enough money to pay off that tax liability. So you could write one check. Because no one else is prepared for it, there would be sort of a multi-year repayment plan, and I think that's been discussed. So that's what's going to happen if there's a decision and that unfavorable to the county, and that money has to go back to Carl. So.
So it's stay tuned.
It is stay tuned, but you know we. There are some fun ways to spend extra money, though.
I just want to note that the question is on the premise that the case will actually end at some point.
And, you know, the sad thing about this is Carl is trying to work with the Mental Health Board. And so we can sit here, we want this to be settled. They want it to be in their favor, but they're still working with us. So you have to be fair on both sides of looking at what is a legal hoo-ha.
Chris Gleason, Executive Director of Rosecrans Central, Illinois, and a new Champaign County resident, so my tax dollars will be supporting you guys too, which is good. So I just wanted to update you on our recovery home because you guys have funded that, and I was over there this afternoon looking at how far we've gotten on the construction of our building, which is on Moreland Avenue. It's right behind Freddy's Custard and Burgers, if you know where that is. I do everything by food landmarks for myself. So it used to be the old Pass Medical Building. So we've begun construction demo, and they actually are starting to paint and put flooring in. And so we're looking like we'll probably open up our new residential site in December. Hopefully around December 17th would be our goal, depending if all the furniture comes in and nothing else happens. But they haven't found any surprises in the building, so that always helps. So our recovery home will be up and open hopefully by mid-December and starting to take people into there. And then we'll have our 32-bed residential facility on our second and third floor. Just wanted to update where we're at and what we're doing with that project. And Mark and I have been working, talking about when do we start to access those funds so that we're not going to use the full funding this year, but we'll be able to use partial of that funding. So, questions? Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, I do have a question. I've heard talk about a detox facility. Is there going to be a detox facility, or what's happening with that?
We're going to be able to accommodate detox at our residential facility. We won't be able to do detox to the point where if someone needs an IV drip or other medical procedures, we won't be able to perform that. But we'll be able to do opiate and mild alcohol, and we'll have nursing 24/7. That's what's stopping us today from doing something like that, is we don't have the nursing capability. So we're going to be in the process of trying to recruit 7 nurses too. So hoping that all goes. So if we have that staff 24/7, we'll do detox on there. I'm waiting for the state to get back to let me know. We applied for flexible beds for detox, which means we wouldn't have to designate a certain amount of beds, that we would be able to flex our beds. So we'll see how they go with that. No one's ever asked for that before. So I would hope we would have the ability to do that. We're not going to have a drop-off detox. And what I mean by that is that someone can't just come there and do detox. They have to be a part of the residential. It has to be a part of their treatment services, so they can't come for 3 days and then go, well, I'm done and I feel better. So we want to start to stop some of that recidivism piece and then give them some residential treatment and better hope out of there. So it won't be similar to what Prairie Center did back in the day related to someone could come in, do detox and leave. So I've been talking with OSF and Carl about other options we could do for that. But yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm Isak, Director of Courage Connection. Two quick things. It's really exciting to hear you asking much higher level questions about the reentry conversation in our community. We've been running a reentry program for about a year and a half, and we're seeing an intentional program. We're seeing incredible success that the folks coming out of incarceration who are really ready to move forward. We had 19 people, only two went back to prison. And of those two, they got out again, they came back and found independent housing. Right? So we know that when there's a focused program that includes support for housing, that there's a tremendous potential for success. There is also First Followers that is focusing on men, WIN Recovery, which is also targeting women, where we're working together, but there are other groups in the community that are really vested in the conversation about reentry, including reentry from jail, not just prison. But a lot of those are long-standing conversations, and they're really, it could potentially be something beneficial about bringing someone in from the outside to get all of the players at the table to help us really create a more unified conversation. So the fact that you're talking about that is really exciting because we can demonstrate that it works. And then just a quick heads up, in 2016 we had the state crisis where the state wasn't paying for the shelter to stay open, the emergency shelter. And at the same time, HUD was starting to minimize the funding for transitional housing. Most of that HUD funding has gone away. So we've been working with several community partners about how do we protect the housing services that currently exist in our community, as well as increase the number of people that we're able to serve. So we've been working with several of the local funders, as well as now the Housing Authority, who's having a seat at the table, and that's changing the game. And so we're looking at, and we're hoping to have a formal proposal soon, of how do we continue to provide this housing, focus on moving people in independent housing more quickly, specifically still women and children for us, and working also then with First Followers and WIN Recovery to really start a much more community-based conversation about housing in general. The need for housing continues to grow. And so we're looking at actually increasing our capacity without increasing the assets for it right now. And so Housing Authority is committing vouchers. We have the cities and the townships looking at committing funds. We'll be looking at bringing it back to this board to talk about how do we further sustain the conversation and the focus on housing to meet the needs as it's being presented in our community. So just, I didn't know how many of you have heard that this conversation is happening in the background. It's one of the most exciting conversations I've been engaged in since I got here, seeing people really sit at the table together to create solutions that our community is presenting. That's not based on where the money is coming from, but it's based on where the need is coming from. And so there will be more coming here over the next several months, but I just wanted to give you a heads up that that's happening in the background. Questions? Thank you.
Hi. I'm Nancy Greenwald. I'm Executive Director of Promise Healthcare. We operate Francis Nelson and the Smile Healthy Dental Programs. And I was asked to come and talk about a release that we had yesterday. We found out last Thursday that we were selected among the many, many community health centers throughout the country for their substance abuse disorder and mental health enhanced funding opportunity. And so for Promise, that's going to be about $246,000. I brought my laptop in case I get questions because it's a long laundry list. The sort of the more substantial things that you'll see will be we applied for that funding to actually support the LCSW, who is part of the school-based health center. So we receive a state grant for the school-based health center, but most of that money goes to the medical care, and none of that money from the state grant did we allocate towards the social worker. And so Caitlin Cornell has been very busy, amazingly busy. She started her practice with us August 1, and now her schedule is nearly full. Which is incredible. I didn't expect it to fill that quickly. So we'll be using the money to help cover the expenses there for that practice, as well as we will be adding case management And for us, it's case management on medical and behavioral health integration, primarily our patients who are seeing a psychiatrist and also seeing our primary care providers. We have been looking into CMS supports case management that we have not been able to execute, and so I'm looking forward to using a true case manager to help work with our nursing staff on the medical side to provide some of the supports. Some of the stuff that's, the one I think of most frequently, the one that I think of is the one that lands on my desk, is patients who come and have an infestation with bed bugs, to the point where every time they come into my clinic, I'm spending $200 or $300 to treat the room that they were in. For a patient who I'm likely to get $10 for, let alone, you know, plus the cost of delivering the care. And these are people who have marginal abilities to deal with that kind of stress. They're in, you know, bad housing. So this is one because I don't have a true, while I have adult wellness who helps with some of the quicker support, some of these really difficult cases have come to me. So I'm looking forward to having a case manager who's probably better trained and better able to support our patients through this. And there are cases that have landed on the medical, my primary care provider nurses. But the money also will go to technical stuff, some of the equipment infrastructure, computer infrastructure that'll be involved, cybersecurity training. It's a very interesting funding opportunity. We are... Promise isn't special or unique to get this funding. Most community health centers, I believe, that applied for it got it. But what is sort of special and unique is that Promise is now the Champaign County FQHC. And previously, we would have been a satellite of another group in Decatur. This funding initiative is only per FQHC. So when an FQHC represents just Champaign County, all that money will be here, or mostly here. It's not exclusive to Champaign County, but that's most of our patients. Previously, when you think of some of the bigger ones, like Southern Illinois Healthcare Foundation or Aunt Martha's, they have the same opportunity to about $250,000. So it's a really rich investment for our community. And so it's a lot of work coming up, but we're excited.
We should have started off with the agencies. This is all really exciting news.
Good news for you.
Okay. Any other agency reports? Okay. All right. Great. Moving to old business. We have a decision memorandum. And actually, can I ask a question about why we have this? Because we voted in July or June on a budget.
You did. And this is the second year in a row that this has happened where there's been now, so that the projection of revenue for next year changed and it went up. So we had to appropriate the additional revenue. So we had to change all the budgets and then we had to make decisions about how to spend the additional money. So the decision was almost all of it is going into allocations with agencies. That's just sort of, we just understand that's the priority. That's the starting point. Contributions and grants. There are other changes, though, and some of those other changes are based on new estimates of personnel costs since the first time we drafted a budget. This is all advice from the county administrator and the county deputy administrator of finance. Thank you. I've struggled with that title all day. Anywhere there's a change, it's italicized. We were asked to increase our estimates of interest income because for the last couple years it's been higher than we expected and we haven't spent it because we didn't budget correctly. So some of this is, it's more like that, but it's still good news. Then there are a few other changes. I think, so what are the other changes? I tried to list them. Let me see. In the memo, I tried to list them. The property tax increases. Oh, also, there's a place for that hospital property tax that you can't spend. So it's included in your revenue, and it's included in contributions and grants, but you're not going to get it, so you can't spend it. But it's still sitting there. Non-employee trainings, we've increased the estimate there. That was one of the places we felt like we could spend some money. We've got a project to develop monthly trainings for service providers, mostly the funded agencies, but really anybody providing services to the people that you're interested in are welcome at these. And they're just, we're starting out small at the library with first Thursday of every month. And so they're starting on October 4th, next a week from tomorrow. But we put a little bit of money in there just to see how it goes. We changed the rent revenue in the Scylla. That was on advice from from review of the statements that we have had lately, that the revenue from the rent has gone up, and I didn't notice that before, so that's a mistake on my part. An increase in the equipment expense with the Scyllas, that's because one of the homes was not fully remodeled when we purchased it. Some improvements were made to bring it to code for the state Scylla licensing purposes, but things like the appliances were not new. So now they're falling apart. So we needed to put some money in there. Again, that was a mistake on my part I didn't really ask the property manager what he was expecting until after you approved the first. Then there's a decrease in the mortgage interest expense. That's based on information from the bank about the mortgage note.
Tom, could you go ahead and read it?
Motion to approve the attached 2019 Champaign County Mental Health Board budget with anticipated revenues and expenditures of $5,404,493.
Thank you, Kyle. I'd like to compliment the staff on the transparency of the budget. We really know where the money is going. Thank you.
Other comments?
Shall we call the vote? Stephanie?
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Joe Omoasagie?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Then we have a second motion. If a board member would care to read the motion for the Scylla fund budget. Kyle?
Motion to approve the attached 2019 Scylla fund budget with anticipated revenues and expenditures of $123,300. Payment of this fund is consistent with the terms of the intergovernmental agreement between the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board and the Champaign County Mental Health Board.
Discussion? Hearing none. Stephanie, would you call?
Tom Moore? No. Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Joe Mosagie?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
The next item for old business is schedule and allocation process timeline. Is this an updated copy on the table?
Because we accidentally put the wrong year.
Okay. Any questions about the schedule and allocation process? We're pretty familiar with this by now, I think. But if there is a question, now's the time to ask it.
I have a question for you about this one.
Go ahead. Take the floor.
Okay. So we finally, there's a person who I've been trying to get to come and talk to you for a long time. He's finally agreed, if you want him to come to the joint study session, which was tentatively scheduled for November 28th, we're getting into a time of the year where people might not be available. But this person is an expert on housing and homelessness and DD and MI. So he can come. The DD board agreed to it today, you know, pending you all agreeing to that. If he comes, he wants me to book him. So I'm talking to you guys now, too, in the audience. He wants me to book him for 48 hours solid of meetings with groups who are working on housing, homelessness, MI, or DD. So it'll be a scheduling bonanza, but it's all dependent on this is the anchor activity because this is part of his job. November 28th.
Maybe a show of hands of those present who think they might be able to come to that. Okay, well.
We have several missing people tonight.
So. Good.
All right.
Any other questions, comments? Okay, CCDB information, anything you want to share?
They had roughly the same business at their meeting this morning.
Okay, yep. Great. Moving on to approval of our minutes on page 207, 212. Do I have a motion to approve? I know this is thinking back to June. Moved by Tom. Do I have a second? Seconded by Joe. Discussion? Hearing none, can we call the question? And actually, it's just a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Opposed? Great. Moving on to the executive director's comments.
Well, since it's getting late and there are still other things to do, I'll save a lot of it for next month. But I do want to let you know that we have another opportunity. Oh, yes. There's another opportunity that you might be interested in, but I think I probably am going to be reaching out to organizations instead. The director of Illinois Department of Mental Health wrote to me yesterday that she and her team have been talking about coming here to meet with us, any of you, and anyone that is interested in building peer supports in this community to talk about their certified recovery support specialist programs and what they understand has worked well in other states. I don't think they're bringing any money with them, but they do run the certification program. I think it's all online, too. So this would just be talking with stakeholders who might be interested in building that kind of capacity here. We have a lot of peer support groups, but they're all mostly volunteer, and they tend to be the traditional anonymous types of peer support. But if people are willing at least to look at this and talk about it. So I just wanted to make sure that you all know if you're interested, please send me a note, and I would try to include you in any meeting like this. If we have more than two of you, we'll go to an open meeting, but they'll come whenever we're ready. So. The other important thing is that I was invited to speak at Carl's Foundation Day this year. The topic is disparities. The person who invited me really wished her assignment had been racial disparities, but it was disability-related disparities. And I thought, well, I feel like we have a group of self-advocates who already know how to do this training. So I asked them, and they agreed. So at Carl Foundation Day, one of the groups of self-advocates that the Mental Health Board has been funding for many years and now the DD Board is funding are going to be the presenters.
Great.
Isn't that cool?
The next item are the staff consultant reports, which once again were so informative and so helpful. And I'll open it briefly for comments, questions to staff, but I can't thank you enough for the work you put into the staff reports. Very helpful. I really have a sense of what's going on.
I just wanted to announce on Saturday, October 6th, there's a Family Resource Day at Marketplace Mall where the Alliance for Inclusion and Respect, which are the artists that we provide support to, that does the art show for Ebert Fest. They've also done the art show for the Disability Expo. Mm-hmm. They will be selling their artwork on this particular day. We have about 12 artists that have agreed to sell their art from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. And we're going to be in our own, it's going to be called Artist Alley. Oh. So we'll be in our own section at Marketplace Mall from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, October 6th.
Any comments or questions about reports provided? Mark, I was really excited to see the connection between Carl and the Pavilion and Rosecrans and OSF. How long have you been working on that, or the community?
That's not something I was working on. I was just informing the board that that had happened.
It's wonderful.
So, yeah. I can't take any credit for that.
I also think it's wonderful that the Time Center will be used again for CU Men's Emergency Shelter. Thank you, Rosecrans, for making those arrangements. Means a lot to many people in the community who were very concerned when we lost that facility. So, wonderful move.
And then the what Isak had mentioned is part of what's alluded to in that same paragraph with the work by Cunningham Township.
Uh-huh.
Related to women's emergency shelter.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of great things are going on. Okay, board-to-board reports. With a two-month hiatus and things just starting back up, we may or may not have any.
Okay. I might actually just stepped out.
Okay.
You did some board-to-board.
Well, I have a brief one on the Dream House. I went to their celebration at the end of the summer, and I was really excited when they asked the chancellor from the U of I to be a speaker, and he said, this is phenomenal. This is something that the U of I should be supporting as well. So I don't know what that means, but he was very definite that it was going to become part of the community outreach from the university, which I think had kind of died down. I hadn't heard much about community outreach for a while. So, yeah, we'll see. I immediately sent him an email saying, thank you, this is really important, and the Mental Health Board, which helped to fund part of DREAM, supports you in providing additional support because they can't do it on the string budget that they have. So it was a very neat celebration. The kids were just thrilled. The families were there. It was good to see.
This is along the lines of the Dream House. I have lunch with a group of guys every Thursday at a restaurant. Culver's on South Neal every Thursday. We've been doing this for years. Urbana School District used to have a program where kids could come, they would get out of school, they would go to Culver's, and they would work for 3 or 4 hours and make money. They scrapped that program. I think they scrapped it because it was really effective and it worked well, and so we don't want to have anything like that running around. I noticed that the kids weren't there, so I talked to the owner about it, since I go there all the time, we know. And he said he would like for them to start it up again. So I asked him if he would be willing to engage another agency with the possibility. And Tracy Dacey and I are going to meet with him to see whether or not some of the Dream House kids might take up that, would do that. And Tracy said they have need for some of the older kids to have some kind of employment. So probably Thursday we'll be meeting. Nothing may come of it, but that's what we're doing.
It's a water machine. Yeah. It's a water cooler.
Okay. Hearing no other discussion, all those in favor of approving the expenditure list, say aye. Any opposed? Okay. I believe that that brings us to board announcements. And Lynn, Mark, Chandra, Stephanie, do you have any
I have one, I think. Carl Hospital does something called Carl Foundation Day every year, and it's the first Thursday in November. And I think that's November 1st this year. And I have been unofficially asked to be on a panel talking about stigma, very open-ended. I don't know who else has been asked to be on the panel, but I wondered if there's somebody from this organization that would like to be on the panel with me. Well, I'm looking at Chandra because I think you'd be great, Chandra, but I don't even know what it's going to be, actually. And I was envisioning if I got to have input in it, that it would not be a formal presentation. It would not be PowerPoints. It would be people with experience inviting the audience to come up with ideas. So we might start with a couple of stories, which we probably could come up with pretty easily, and have some somewhat open-ended questions to get the audience to talk about their own ideas about stigma and how it relates to healthcare particularly.
Am I being voluntold or like?
Well, I've got to get in touch with the person who asked me informally because I haven't been asked formally yet.
Okay. My supervisor just signed my vacation form for that day. Okay.
That would be fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, though. I would have done it, though.
if there's no quorum on that day, we're going to have a very light action agenda. It's got some information, a whole bunch of drafts of new and revised documents, and I'm not sure, not a whole lot of action. So it could be, what do we do? We still meet, right? We just, you can't, it's not a formal meeting if there's not a quorum, but you, to distribute the information so that it's posted and they can start thinking about it, because it's, right.
Well, I hope everybody else can come. I think the meeting is adjourned, unless there are any other. Great.
Very presidential.
I'm going to second it. Adjourned. Thank you, everybody, very much.
Thank you.